All right, today is May 11th, 1993, and my name is Rick Bradley, and I'm in Greensboro, North Carolina, with Ralph Hodgen. Ralph, first thing I want to ask you about is the time that Red Jones, I believe his name is, the umpire,
right,
threw 14 of you out in one game.
Right. Well, we were in Boston, and a lot of complaints about the umpire, and they was hollering back and forth. But I wasn't hollering at the umpire. I just opened my mouth as he looked over there, and mm-hmm. So he thought it was me, and he threw me out. But these two or three had already been thrown out before I got thrown out. And so I went on in the clubhouse, and just a few minutes, here come a bunch more in. But they made us stay in the clubhouse, but they let us stay in the game. And I saw Red rode to an exhibition game with us on the bus after that once the next spring, and we was talking about that, and he said, well, I looked over there and you had your mouth open, so I just threw you out. And that was the main thing about that.
Well, that has to be some kind of record, 14.
But Red was quite a character, but he was a pretty good umpire.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember what the complaint was about, or?
It was just, I don't know whether it was strikes or what it was, or what was the play on the infield or not.
All right, how'd you get started playing baseball? What was your earliest remembrance of playing the game?
Well, I started out at Reidsville, North Carolina. They were in the Bi-State League. They had used to be a semi-pro league,
mm-hmm.
And that year they went into pro ball, and I went over to Reidsville, and George Farrell sent me over. He knew Pick Biggerstaff was going to manage Reidsville, and he sent me over there to see him, and I went over and signed with him, and I played there till last of June, and Detroit bought me, and I went over to Field Hill in the same league that year. That was 1935, and I finished up the year in Field Hill. Then the next year, they sent me to Charleston, West Virginia. And from there on, I went to several minor leagues. And in 37, I went to Beaumont, Texas, and trained with them in Beaumont. And they sent me back to Charlotte. And Charlotte was independent, but was with the Washington Senators. And I got my hand broke, and I was to play it and threw my hand up in front of my face and hit me on this bone here.
Oh, I see. The ball's coming at you.
And I was out for 3 weeks, and I didn't play there anymore. They sent me to Scranton in the Pennsylvania League, a New York Penn League it was that time. And I finished out the year there. Then in 38, they sent me to Evansville, Indiana. And then the next year, I went up to the Braves spring training and stayed with them about half of the year.
Had you played any baseball before professionally? Was there any Sandlot or high school or American Legion or anything like that?
Yeah, I played from the time I could be enough mm-hmm. to run and throw, and I played on three or four semi-pro teams and in a semi-pro league here, and mm-hmm. always hit good in them, and so that's the reason they wanted me to come over to Reidsville.
Who was the first scout that approached you? And then, second part, who was the scout that eventually signed you?
Well, I was never signed by a scout. George Farrell was—he was playing pro ball in. That was he's Wes and Rick's brother, and I lived just above them, out in the country there on the dairy farm,
mm-hmm.
and I knew them, and that's what got me into pro ball, but. I can't think of a scout for Detroit. Scouted me over in that league, and they Detroit bought me that first year I played ball. I never did go to Detroit.
Mm-hmm. What'd your family think about your baseball career?
Well, they liked it. My mother and daddy both liked mm-hmm. baseball. my whole family liked baseball.
This was, I want to say, the throes of the Depression, but it was the mid-30s.
Yeah, it was in Depression time. It was, I had some teeth that was, back teeth was bothering me, and I wouldn't have had them pulled, and they it's hard to heal up. So I went home, and I left the ball club and went home, and I told him I didn't know whether I'd come back or not. But I went home, and the next day my daddy put me in the cornfield, a hole in corn. So I decided then that I'd rather play ball. So I went back, and from there on I kept playing ball.
Mm-hmm. What position did you play in the minor leagues? Were you, I know when you made
outfield.
The majors, it was all outfield.
Yeah.
That was nothing else, no pitching? Yeah. Or.
No.
They played a little bit of third base in the bigs.
Well, I started out, when I went to Reedsville, I started out at third base. And I was hitting about 450, so they put me in the outfield in less than a month's time. And I stayed in the outfield till I went to Detroit. And this third baseman had gone into service, but they had a player there that had played in AAA ball at that time, and he wasn't hitting, and so I'd been pinch hitting when I first went up there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing good at pinch hitting, so we were playing the Yankees doubleheader on Sunday, and Dykes walked by my locker, and he asked me, he said, can you play third base? Well, I wanted to play. I didn't care where I played. That's what I wanted to play. So I said, yes. And he said, well, you're in there. So I went out and played a doubleheader, and I got 5-7 against the Yankees that Sunday afternoon.
How was your fielding?
Well, it was, it wasn't the best, but it was good enough to get by. And so I played third base the rest of the year, and in the next year I played third base. The biggest trouble I had about playing infield was when I'd go to throw, I'd always, used to throwing long, and it's hard for me to get away away from throwing it long and holding it down. Sometimes I'd throw it on first baseman's head. I threw one, we was playing in Comiskey Park, and I threw on a whale with first baseman's head, and when I went in, Dyke said, that's the way to go. He says, if you're going to throw it away, throw it away.
Don't make it close, huh? I just want to backtrack about your minor league career from about 35 through 38. Doing a little bit of research in 35, it said that you had 48 outfield assists in 1935. Is that true, or...?
Well, see, I was playing, so I started off at third base, would be at third base, yeah.
All right, because the book I read only had you in the outfield, and I'm thinking 48 assists from the outfield in 1 year. Wow.
Yes, part of those was from third base.
Mm-hmm. How about, would you, just real quick, if there's any managers or if there's any teammates of yours when you're playing in the minors at Reedville and Charleston, Charlotte, Scranton, Evansville. Anybody did you remember? Anybody you played with that eventually made the majors? Or
yeah, a lot of them I played with went to the major leagues. Yeah, but I don't know any of the managers. I believe Jack Onslow. I believe played. He was a catcher. He played in the big leagues.
Mm-hmm. And he was your manager where?
Dixie Parker was at Fieldale. That was the first year I played ball. Then the next year, Iggy Walters was that manager. He's from Detroit. And then in 37, Lee Head over at Charlotte, and he was a catcher. And then when I went up to Scranton, Bob Coleman was an old catcher, and he was my manager there. And the next year, he went to Evansville, Indiana. They got in the 3I League, and that was his home, so he managed that club there, and he got me out there somehow. I don't know how, but he got me out there, and we won the pennant that year out there, and so there was four or five of us went up to to the Braves, Boston Braves, from that club.
Yeah, explain to me how you got from Evansville up to the Braves.
Well, I don't know if they bought me or how, but when I was with Evansville, I belonged to Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow or another, I don't know what happened.
To this day,
I never did get nothing on it, how it was.
Mm-hmm.
The next year is when Landis made free agents of several of those Detroit's minor league players. And I don't know, I never did know just what happened there.
Mm-hmm. Now, in 39, you spent some time with the Braves and you spent some time with Hartford. Your first day in the big leagues, I have April the 19th, 1939. Now, what do you remember about your first day?
I don't remember much about it.
No?
in Boston there.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't guess I did very well because I don't remember.
Okay. I was curious. You started out the year with the Braves and then you wound up in Hartford, and that was just one time up and one time down, or did you shuffle back?
Well, I went back the next spring to spring training with the Braves, but I went down to Hartford at the start of the season
mm-hmm.
and played there 2 years. And then I went to, I was drafted by San Francisco, the Pacific Coast League then. And I went out there in 42. And I had a good year there. Then the White Sox drafted me.
Mm-hmm.
And I stayed with them. Well, I was in the service 45, and then I stayed through 48 with the White Sox.
Okay. So, well, let's go over year by year here. Real quick, 1943. You're one of, from what I read in one book that I was doing a little bit of research on, you're one of the very few guys who hit 300 in a rookie year and never hit 300 again.
Yeah.
Hit 314, not a bad season. And then in 44, 295, home runs and RBIs were almost the same in stolen bases and things like that. But how much were you playing? And I know you said you split time between third base and outfield. And
The last 2 years I was there, yeah. Last 3 years I was there. I went back to the outfield when I got out of service. The third baseman come back. Bob Kennedy was the third baseman.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had a Loaded Johnny was there. He was a third baseman.
Yeah, Dario Loaded Johnny.
Yeah.
Ralph, you played in 43 and 44 when the war was going on.
Yeah.
We'll talk about 45 for a second, but when you came back in 46, was there a lot of people talk about baseball during from 42 to 45 wasn't up to snuff? It wasn't the same as before the war and after the war. True or false?
Well, 44 it was, and 43 it was. It was pretty good because
mm-hmm.
it was still a lot of the players was there, but now 44 wasn't quite as good. And I don't know about 45, but it must not have been, but now it come back. And I don't think in 46 there's a lot of players coming out of service. When I come out of service, my little girl died while I was in spring training, and I didn't have any spring training. I was got way behind there.
Mm-hmm.
But the next year, was doing all right, and I got hit in the head by Hal Newhouser, and I was out 2 months, and then I come back, but it never did affect me after that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, when you 45, you spent military service. What branch of military were you in?
Tanks, Fort Knox. I went to Fort
Knox. Oh, I see. Let's see, if my math is correct, at the time you're about 28 at the time, or maybe 29, somewhere in there?
I was 29 when I was mm-hmm. in the service.
Mm-hmm. Was that unusual to be drafted that? I mean, you had played ball in 42 and 43 and 44 in the Army or the service. They hadn't got after you. Now, all of a sudden, in 45, the war's almost over. Now they want you.
Well, I had a high draft number. Then my little girl was sick, too. Mm-hmm. When we were in San Francisco, she was just a baby, and she had a sickness out there and left her with convulsions. And
mm-hmm.
And she had to be watched all the time, and that kept me out for a while.
I see. Okay.
But then in 44, No, it was...
Yeah, because he was really like that.
43, I guess it was. I went to... No, it was 44. I went to Camp Croft, South Carolina, mm-hmm. To be inducted. And I went down at that time. they were taking everybody. And when they got back home, they said, well, we'll let you know when you go in. It'll probably be 3 or 4 weeks. So I went on back to Chicago, and they never called me until the next February.
Oh, I see.
And that was and I went in, at that time, went to Fort Bragg. Well, they called me in to, a colonel called me into his office, and he said, you don't pass the physical enough to go into the service. But says, we can't turn you down. Said, you'd have to go through Washington. And he says, we're going to send you into the, over to the medical and keep you over there for a week and give you a good physical, but says you're going to have to go in anyway. So I said, well, if I got to go in anyway, let me stay in now and go on with these guys I come down here with. We, as all 3 or 4 busloads of us from Greensboro, went down. And he says, no, says we're going to send you over there. But he says, the only way we can turn you down is you go through Washington. And I asked him again, I says, let me go ahead, because I'll be in with somebody I know. But he wouldn't do it, and they kept me a week, and they never did tell me nothing. They gave me all kind of tests, and never told me anything. Only says, you can go home for the weekend, but be back here at 7 o'clock Monday morning. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did, and I stayed in until the war was over. And then as soon as the war was over, they let me out.
Sounds like our government, doesn't it? Now, when you were in the military, was there any other ball players that you were in there with?
Joe Gradiola was there, and Early Wynn. They'd been in a little longer than I had, and they were over in a different outfit.
Okay.
But we played ball together there.
Mm-hmm.
And we, I was supposed to join the man that that run the ball club, that the there in the outfit that I was in. He told me that I was going to, when I got back, they let me come home on a 3-day pass. And they said when I got back, he's going to transfer me over to the Army division that they were in. I was going to the South Pacific. But while I was at home, the war ended. When I got back, they called me over to one of the places there where they let them out, and they told me I was going home. I didn't know it till then. Mm-hmm. But then they sent me on back, and then I got out. But before I come home on that pass, they called me to come over to a certain building number. And when I got over, it was a big auditorium, a tremendous big auditorium with a stage. And down between the stage and the seats was a lot of room in there, and there was a table set up there, and it was a captain there at that table, and I walked in and went up, and the only thing he said to me, he said, how do you feel about going overseas? Well, I said, if I've got to go, I've got to go. And that's all it was said. He dismissed me. I don't know what that was all about.
But, maybe you're mistaken for somebody else.
Well, I mean, if you're going to go, you're going to go. Mm-hmm. So, but as soon as I got back to camp from that 3-day pass where the war ended, then they let me out right away. And more than likely it was because of my little girl.
Okay, in 46, now you come back.
Yeah.
And now you say you're not playing any third base anymore. Now you're playing.
No, I didn't play third base anymore.
Bob Kennedy came back.
Bob Kennedy was there, and Loaded Johnny, and mm-hmm. another one or two. Mm-hmm.
And you hit pretty good first 2 years, 314, 295, and then slipped just a little bit, down to about 252. Obviously, problems at home, I'm guessing, and then
I was out of lots first year there. I come home, and then I went back. Then I was out. I got off to a good start in 47.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got hit in the head, well, then I was out.
Yeah, tell me about that, you and Neuhauser.
Well, it was opening day in Detroit, and there was snow on the ground and cold, and the bases was loaded, and he had two strikes on me, and he fired a fastball in, hit me upside the head,
mm-hmm.
and knocked me out for just a couple of seconds.
Mm-hmm. And at the time, all you're wearing is your baseball cap.
Yeah, you didn't wear any helmets at that
and
time.
And there was nothing inside
from,
it. Okay.
From then, that's what I think was starting of the helmets, because they begin to come in more. First, when they first come in, it just had a plastic thing inside the cap,
yeah.
and then it just built on up to what you got now.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, you were out for about 2-3 months then.
Yeah, I come home for 2 months, mm-hmm. and then went back, and I hit pretty good the rest of that year,
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
then the next year I didn't hit as quite as good.
Okay, a couple of things I want to talk about in 46 and 47. 46, they had the Mexican League. Couple guys, I know a teammate of yours, Alex Carrasquel, he signed with the Mexican League.
Yeah.
What was the deal behind this, and did anybody ever approach you about playing?
I knew there were some of the players going down there, but I never did have no contact with any of them or anybody from down there.
Mm-hmm.
The only time I was ever contacted about playing out of the country was in 1951, I believe it was. After the season was over, I got a wire from, I was playing for San Francisco that year, and after I come home, I got a wire from Mr. Graham out there, who was the general manager of the ball club, Sacramento Ball Club,
mm-hmm.
and said if I wanted to go play in Puerto Rico, I don't know what, remember what town it was, but some town in Puerto Rico,
mm-hmm.
to get in touch with, I forget the man that was managing it, but I didn't want to go down and play there with us, so I didn't go.
Okay, what about in 47, do you remember this one? I want to say the St. Louis Browns. I forgot to write it down here. When they brought Dizzy Dean back, and he pitched 4 innings, like a publicity stunt. You remember that in 47, the end of the season?
No. I remember him pitching, but I don't remember anything else.
Uh-huh.
I don't know much about that.
I was just curious.
Now, he pitched against, when I was with Boston Braves, he was with the Cubs.
Mm-hmm.
And he pitched a game against us, and we didn't get the 2 hits off of him. I got one of them. Somebody else got one.
Okay, and in 48, last year with the White Sox, last year in the majors, what happened between 48 and 49? That you, the White Sox, how did the White Sox let you go, or did you leave on your own, or?
No, they sent me to. Sacramento I don't know if they
Sacramento, their team in the Pacific Coast League, or was it just like a,
well, it was independent, but they had a player out there they were wanting, and they wanted me. They wouldn't take anybody else that they put me on waivers, and the first time I didn't go through, the second time I went through, so then they sent me out there outright.
Mm-hmm. And then how long? You played in Sacramento for how many years?
3 years.
3 years. And then after Sacramento, you said something about San Francisco.
Well, I played for San Francisco in 42, I was drafted by White Sox from out there. That's, I never played a place like that. You wear your top coat to the ballpark all summer long.
Is that the old Seal Stadium out there?
Yeah. It is a beautiful park, but the infield was awful rough. Outfield was like playing on a carpet.
Right.
But you never stopped under a fly ball. If you did, you wouldn't catch it.
Yeah, the wind was blowing around all the time.
You had to keep moving all the time.
So was 51 then your last year playing baseball?
No, I managed a couple of years and wound up there.
Mm-hmm.
Up here in at Reedsville,
mm-hmm.
and I went out to in the wintertime and got a job out here at one of these oil terminals to driving, which in the wintertime you could, back then you couldn't get enough oil and stuff shipped out of here. They'd run out. And I went out there to drive for 3 months and stayed there for 25 years.
Well, I'll tell you what, Ralph, we'll get back to that a little bit later on. That's here on page 2. But before, I want to talk a little bit about kind of hitter you were and the kind of outfielder you were. How, just if you would describe for me on the tape, you know, what kind of hitter you were.
I was a line drive hitter.
Mm-hmm.
But I always, when I was at Reedsville, started out, well, it was a small park,
mm-hmm.
and I hit a few home runs. But when I went over to Fieldale, we played in a big meadow. It was a nice ballpark, but it was a big meadow. It didn't have no fence around it. There wasn't no use trying to hit them either. And then the next year at Charleston was a big ballpark. You couldn't hit one out of the right field. I don't guess there's ever one hit out of that right field.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the ballparks that I played in were big parks. And when I went to Chicago, it was a big park, Comiskey Park. And you're just not, a guy like me, well, not anybody going to hit too many home runs because it's just too big. And that ball didn't jump then like it does now. And Frisco was the same way. And you had a wind blowing, always blowing from right across the left. And you just weren't going to hit them out of that field out there.
Mm-hmm. How about your hitting stance? Were you straight away or open or closed or anything? And then did you copy anyone, or was your hitting stance all your own?
But I didn't. If they got me out, now I would move around some up there. If a man was getting me out, I wouldn't keep on that way. I'd change. And I never did think anybody could get me out. Of course they did, but I felt like I could hit it. The only guy that I never did get a hit off of, I could hit it, but I never did get a hit off of him, was Sam Jones, a big pitcher for San Diego, and he went up to Cleveland, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I could hit it, but I couldn't get no one out. I never did get a hit off. But then that's I don't know, I just never could get hit. But now there was a pitcher at St. Louis Browns had that was a relief pitcher, and he never did get me out. I don't remember him ever getting me out.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes, you know, that's just the way it goes.
Things happen. How about, what kind of fielder would you rate yourself?
A good outfielder.
Mm-hmm. What kind of arm?
I had a good arm.
You played, which outfield position did you play the most in the three?
Left field most of the time, but sometimes I played center or right.
Mm-hmm.
Played right much of right field in Sacramento.
How about the base runner? What kind of base runner?
I could run bases, yeah. I could run, throw, and hit.
Mm-hmm.
I hit 300 in every class league there was, from D to the big league.
Mm-hmm. All right, let me just throw some names past you. I'll start off with a couple of pitchers, just out of curiosity, and talk about what you did to try to hit off of them, or maybe what they threw to you, or anything. How about start off with Bob Feller?
Bob Feller, I'd get away back in the box as far as I could. Mm-hmm. But it's something that was never said much about him that I don't know of. Was a curveball. Everything was fastball, but he had as good a curveball as I ever saw. And if you get away back in the box, well, it would break so much it would be low,
I see.
Then I'd have to hit the fastball. Of course, fastball was hard to hit too. but I had better luck by getting back in the box.
Was Feller the hardest throw you ever saw or not?
He could throw awful hard. I don't know. I guess he was.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Allie Reynolds could throw hard, and Early Wynn could throw hard when they first went up. Now, they could throw hard. Those three was, I guess, about the hardest throwers I ever faced.
Mm-hmm. How about Bob Lemon?
Bob Lemon didn't throw as hard as they did. He was more sinker ball pitcher, and he had a pretty good curve.
Mm-hmm.
But when I first went up, he couldn't throw as hard as they could. Not to me, he didn't.
Mm-hmm. Still a pretty good pitcher, though.
Good pitcher, yeah. I remember when he was at, I believe it was Wilkes-Barre, when they started making a pitcher out of him. He didn't start going up. He played in that
outfield, I believe, right?
Yeah, he was in Wilkes-Barre in that Easter late when I was there. And they made a sure he made a pitch out of him.
How about, let me just throw another one at you here. How about Eddie Lopat?
Lopat did throw the easiest anybody I ever saw. Yeah. But he wouldn't throw the ball over the plate. He throwed it so easy, you'd think it's going to be good, but the thing might be 6 inches off the plate or up or down, and it looked like he's coming in there, and he just wouldn't be in there. I played with him 3 years, I believe it was, over at the White Sox. He came up with the White Sox. And we were playing in the... We were playing in Yankee Stadium, and he was pitching against us. And I got two hits off of him, and the hits was just the way he throwed up there. They were just barely get out to the outfield. Mm-hmm. And he said something to me about, why don't you hit the ball? And I said to him, I said, well, I'm hitting it just like you throw it.
What do you think of that?
Well, he just sort of grinned, and that's because we knew one another pretty well. And
who'd you room with?
I roomed with, when I first went up, I roomed with Jake Wade,
mm-hmm.
and then Wally Moses, and I roomed with Luke Kaplan a little bit, and Baker, I forget his first name, little infielder.
Oh, Floyd.
Floyd Baker, yeah, Floyd Baker. We roomed together all the time. After he came over there in about, I guess must have been about 46,
yeah,
somewhere in there. But always room with him.
Any good roommate stories? Somebody coming in late at night or missing bed check or anything like that?
I don't know. Floyd and I was sort of like, we never did very rowdy. And I usually sleep when the others come in.
Mm-hmm.
So
the married guys were asleep and the single guys were out, huh? How about, you played in the majors anyway, played in a couple of parks that aren't around anymore, Comiskey and Braves Field.
Yeah.
What do you remember about those two?
Well, Comiskey was, I enjoyed playing there, but when the wind was blowing out, you know it was going to rain, which it didn't blow out much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could hit the ball pretty good. You could reach the seats, but when that wind was blowing in, you just couldn't. You just couldn't hit it out.
A lot of room to roam out there playing the outfield?
Plenty of room, yeah.
How about Bracefield?
Bracefield was, wasn't as near as big, and it was sort of flat there on that river. It wind blowed in a little bit there, too. Hardest ball, I believe, that I ever saw hit, Ted Williams hit it there in Chicago one Sunday afternoon. Bing Miller, Bing and Ted were pretty good buddies. Mm-hmm. Bing was always on him about something, and he called it Teddy Ball or something. And the wind was blowing in that day. And then we had a real close ball game. I believe the game was tied. And he come up, he hadn't got any, he hadn't got a hit. And Bing was on him saying, you won't hit it out of here today, you won't hit it out of today, because that wind was blowing in. But the last time he come up, and I think it was win and run, he hit a line drive that went into the upper deck, right into that wind.
Mm-hmm.
And that upper deck, it right down the line was 352. And then you had a high wall there, and then the first row of seats there, and then you had the upper deck was on up high. And he hit that thing as a line drive right up through that wind, up in that upper deck. I believe that's about hard, not just a hard hit ball that I ever saw. Pat Seary one Sunday in Philadelphia. He hit four home runs that Sunday, and the fifth one, it missed it about a foot. It curved foul about a foot. It would have been five if it had been fair. Now he hit those. He could hit a ball as hard as anybody else.
Yeah, but I think Pat's problem was he just didn't hit it very often. I guess.
No, he had one spot that he could hit it. And if you got it in that spot, it's gone, but if you keep it out of that, he just didn't
you get, had him. Huh?
Yeah.
How about other than Red Jones, the famous umpire that threw out 14 years in one afternoon? Are there any other umpires you remember? Did you have a favorite, or did you have a least favorite, somebody that when you were up there?
No, there wasn't. I mean, I didn't see too much difference in them. Mm-hmm. They were all, if you get up there, you're a good umpire. You get there. You, of course, sometimes they have bad days, yeah. Like a ball player, they'll have bad days. But when you get that far, they're pretty good umpires. Mm-hmm.
Other than the when he run you for smiling at him or for opening your mouth there, Red, we're talking about it. You ever get thrown out any other games? Or any big rhubarbs you remember?
No, I don't remember.
Pretty easy going.
I don't remember getting thrown out up there. Other than that, that time.
What did that cost you?
Nothing. Actually, when he sent them all in, he sent word in there, said, don't anybody get undressed. Everybody stay in here, because if you need you back out there, you can go back out and go in the game.
See.
They just made us go in the clubhouse and stay.
Oh, I see.
And,
just to quiet things
left
out.
Nobody on the bench.
Oh, I see.
They run them all. Didn't leave nobody on the bench. And said if you have to have somebody, they can send in who they want, and you can go back out there.
That's interesting. How about traveling? What do you remember about traveling? I imagine it was a lot of trains. I don't know about
it was all trains till the last year.
And what effect did it have on you being away from home and then on your wife and your kids?
Well, it's you get used to it. I mean, as far as being away, but after you go around the league the first time, well, you see everything, and then it's not a whole lot more than just go out and play ball. But that train, we had some long train rides. We used to go about 3 weeks at a time. When we'd go out, maybe we might go into Boston, maybe New York, down to Washington, cut across to St. Louis. And from Washington to St. Louis on that train, didn't have no air conditioning on those trains then. And I remember one trip across there was really rough, but hot, so hot. But all in all, it wasn't too best traveling I ever had was in the Coast League. We'd go on the road a week at a time, or maybe, and we'd go into town. We'd stay a week, and you just go in and unpack. And then when the week is up, you'd go back home and stay a week.
Oh, I see.
Unless you went up to Portland and Seattle, you might split that up, because that's a long ways up there. Now, from San Francisco to Seattle is a long ride.
Was that train or bus?
That was train till when I was at Frisco. But when I went to Sacramento out there, we rode the plane. Now, we might play a doubleheader on Sunday afternoon, and then we'd fly home, have Monday off. You play every Monday, you'd be off. And so, which gave you from Sunday till Tuesday night, that's a pretty good time off. And I really enjoyed that. We played 1950, we played 200 games out there. And season's over, you're not tired, because you only go around the league twice, play 200 games, go around the league twice. And you're not tired. The World Series was over before our season was over out there in 1950.
And when would the season start with all these off days and 200 games?
We started in March, last of March.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
And played the middle of October, late October?
It was after middle of October.
How about the, let me see here.
I enjoyed the coast, playing in the coast at Sacramento more than anywhere during my career in baseball. Now, San Francisco, if it hadn't been for that weather out there, that's one place that I wouldn't live if they'd give it to me. I wouldn't.
Yeah.
That weather's terrible.
Now, when you were out on the coast, was your family here, or were they with you?
They were out there.
They were out there?
They always went with me during the season.
Well, that made it easier on you.
Yeah.
Sure. How about equipment? I know that, talking about long, hot train rides, I know that the uniforms that you guys had to wear, and then playing like in St. Louis and some of these other places in the summertime, that had to be...
Well, they were hot, but...
pretty miserable.
We had wool uniforms, but after the war, they got lightweight wool, and they wasn't bad, up to the war, you had that wool, and it was heavy, and that would get wet. Now, it was a... It was heavy.
Like carrying another 20 pounds.
Yeah,
huh?
Just about. Yeah.
How about much difference now in the equipment that you use? Gloves had to be a little bit different.
Well, the gloves are almost twice as big than what we had. They started along about 48 somewhere in there. That's when they started getting bigger. The pitchers got a glove about an inch longer on the fingers.
Mm-hmm.
They was the first ones to get them. And then they kept on it until everybody got them. And I look at some of these gloves now. We always caught the ball in our hand.
Mm-hmm.
But now they're catching them up in the
webbing. Yeah.
Up in the webbing. And I don't guess they know what it is to catch a ball in your hand.
You're probably right. How about what was the feeling? You watch TV nowadays and you a guy comes up. And, in fact, I saw this in spring training this year. I was down in Florida watching the Indians. A guy was pitching for Cleveland. They had hit a couple home runs previous, and then another batter comes up, and he got two quick strikes on him. The next pitch was behind the guy's head, and there's a big fight. Now, was it different when you played? Did you expect to get knocked down?
Yeah.
And it was just a respect thing.
It was part of the ball game.
And you got up and brushed yourself off and just got back in there again.
You got back in there.
But there
again.
Weren't anywhere near as many brawls.
And you might get knocked down again.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing of it is, which they did it sometime. Now, if they knocked one of our players down, then our pitcher's going to knock one of theirs down.
Mm-hmm.
And they knew that. But sometimes they would do it anyway. But, I mean, that would take care of it. They would say about it. That's the way they would get even with them. I mean, your team, if they knocked your man down, mm-hmm. then you knock him down. That's the way they'd take care of it.
Did they let you know it was coming or not?
No.
No?
No, no.
And this is, they never throwing, where were they throwing? They weren't throwing belt high, were they? A lot of times they were throwing at your head.
No, they throw at your head.
Different game. How about, talking about management and things like that. Managers that you had in the big leagues, you had three fairly famous ones. In Boston, you had Casey, didn't you?
Yeah, I played for Casey.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, he was, I don't think he was quite as well known then as he was later on.
No, he was, after he went over with the Yankees. Of course, when he was with the Yankees, they had two teams over there. Well, they did when I was up there. They had two teams, they had players sitting on the bench just as good as they had players out there playing. And if they didn't have them, they had them down at Newark, or they had them at Kansas City.
Yeah. So just about anybody could have managed that team, is what you're
saying.
Yeah. Well, what kind of manager was Case when you? I knew you were just up with Boston for a short time, but
well,
is he funny or?
Well, he was all the time something.
Yeah.
Carrying on with something. Yeah. Yeah. I played for a couple of other managers I thought were better managers than he was.
Okay. Well, who's that?
Well, Dykes was a good manager, and I played for Lefty O'Doul and Ted Lyons. Of course, when Ted had the ball club, we didn't have too much pitching, and that was one thing hurt us over there.
How'd you get along with in Boston? How'd you get along with was it Bob Quinn?
Yeah, I got along fine with Bob Quinn.
And how about in Chicago with Mrs. Comiskey?
Yeah, I got along with all of them fine.
Treated pretty well?
Yeah.
We talked earlier about when you went to your first pro contract, let's say. What was that? How much money was that for? Do you remember?
You mean when I started out?
Yeah.
$70 a month.
$70 a month, that was with Reedville?
Reedville. And then they raised me up to, I was playing good, and they raised me up to 75. And then when I went on a field day, they raised me to 85.
Mm-hmm. $85 a month.
Yeah.
How about in 39 with the Braves? What were you? Well, how was it worked out then? Did you get a certain amount when you were with the Braves and a certain amount with Hartford, or did you have a major league contract throughout the year?
I had a major league contract. And I was down there on option.
Mm-hmm. What was that?
All right. It's about $600 a month.
Mm-hmm. Considered pretty good money at the time?
Yeah.
Pretty happy?
Yeah.
How about with the White Sox, what kind of money did you make there? What was the most you ever made in
about 10.
In 1 year? $10,000 a year. That's not too bad money.
Well, at that time it wasn't. Well, it was. That was pretty good at that time.
How about ever? I've heard a couple stories with some interviews I've done. As a guy was maybe promised something, maybe go to the office looking for a raise, and said, well, if you do this year, then we'll take care of it at the end of the year, and then they didn't, management didn't come through. That ever happened to you, or?
No, I've had something that they told me they would do, but they always did.
Oh, always came through. Yeah. How'd you get along with the press? They always treat you pretty fairly?
Yeah.
No big feuds with the...
No, I never... If you went out and hustled and played pretty good, you didn't have a problem. You some ball players, you know, they, if they're not going good, they have a tendency to lag.
Mm-hmm.
But I always played as hard as I could play.
How about the fans? How'd they treat you?
Fine.
Mm-hmm. Were you a big fan favorite, or?
Well, sometimes.
Any cult following? Any fan clubs or anything like that?
No, you didn't have much fan club back then, like you do now. Mm-hmm.
But once again, as long as you're out there hustling, yeah, they were rooting for you, huh?
Yeah.
All right. All right, Ralph, what kind of work did you do in off-season to supplement your
income? Well, I was
raised
on the farm, and I always went back to and worked on in the dairy farm during the winter.
Mm-hmm. Parents?
Yeah.
Dairy farm?
Yeah.
And that was that was all through your pro career?
The last couple of years in Chicago, my daddy retired.
Mm-hmm.
Then I worked for the oil terminals out there, and then that's when I stayed out there and retired from there.
Mm-hmm. How about superstitions? Do you have any superstitions?
No.
When you're playing?
No.
No, you see a lot of guys, you know, like Sparky won't step on the line when he does that, take off the pitcher. Was there anybody that you saw that was really superstitious? Any good stories you remember?
Yeah, we had some, but I just don't remember who they were. But there are some that's pretty suspicious.
Same socks, same T-shirt, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah,
pretty normal. Yeah. How about what would you do? You have a favorite game? Do you have a game that you played that is your favorite? As you look back and you say that was without a doubt the best I ever played? It could be anywhere, minor, major league.
No, I never did. No special game.
No special game, so all right. Now in 48, after the 48 season's over and the White Sox worked out that deal with Sacramento, they were looking for a player and Sacramento wanted you. Did you know at that time that you weren't going to make it back up, or did you have a feel, or did you say to yourself, well, this is just temporary and I'll be back with...
No, they... I didn't know it until they made the deal, Frank Ling come over as general manager,
mm-hmm.
and he's the one that made the deal.
Mm-hmm.
Sacramento had a young ball player that the White Sox wanted. Looked like a real good prospect,
mm-hmm.
but Bill Wilson, but he never did make it.
But you, what I'm trying to find out was you did you think that this was just going to be a temporary deal? And you were going to make it back, maybe with not with the White Sox, but with
no,
the other team.
No, I never.
Just kind of
never gave it a thought.
Oh, I see.
Because I was in my 30s then,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't stay around like they do now.
Oh, I see. Okay. How about you're done playing baseball? You 51 was your last year in Sacramento, and then you said you played and managed
Reedsville
for.
Couple of years.
And then that was it then?
No, I went down in Florida and managed. I was down about two-thirds of the year, and I could come back. Went went to the oil turn was out here.
Was the adjustment from playing baseball and managing baseball to going to work in oil fields, was that easy for you? Or?
Well, when you get sort of itchy feet along in the spring,
mm-hmm.
You'd be all right for 2 or 3 years. It was so long, for about 20 years, every spring.
Yeah, that's all you did. Yeah.
Yeah. But we had some long trips. When we leave, the first 2 years I was up there, we trained at French Lick, Indiana, and we never got on the ball field but one time,
mm-hmm.
because of snow and stuff. But then the last 3 years we trained in where the Rose Bowl is there.
Pasadena.
Pasadena. Yeah. We trained at Pasadena. And then when we had finished spring training, we'd get all of our clothes and everything together, and except one bag, and what we call our 1,000-milers would be more or less dark clothes,
mm-hmm.
dark shirts and
1,000-milers.
And they'd ship all rest of them back to Chicago, and we'd be 3 weeks from Pasadena to Chicago, and we might go over and play at Los Angeles there, play the Cubs a game or two, and or Cleveland over there, play them a time or two. Then we'd go down to San Diego, and then we'd go from San Diego, we'd go into Phoenix or Yuma or
Tucson,
and then we'd go from there maybe to Albuquerque. We'd go through Albuquerque, and sometimes we'd play there, and then we'd go on down to El Paso,
mm-hmm.
and then we'd go from there down. We went down to Del Rio and played the exhibition game down there. Played out in the racetrack. There's a racetrack out in the desert there, and if a ball got by the outfield and they would stop going out there on that hard pan, and that they just fixed an infield there in front of the grandstand at the horse racetrack there. Then we might go on down. We'd go on down to New Orleans and then up through Dallas, Fort Worth, and Houston, and then on up into Little Rock, and then up in Kansas City and Rock Island before we get in Chicago. And then we'd get in there maybe on a Saturday or Sunday and have a day off Monday and play the Cubs exhibition game, and then we'd open up the season. And that was sort of rough going. We were on that train all the time.
Yeah.
And then you pull in a town, you might get in there at midnight, well, they'd park us on the side, and we'd get off the train, go up to the hotel, and maybe change our uniforms up there,
mm-hmm.
and then go back and get on that train.
Quite a life, huh?
Yeah.
So you're done playing and you're working for the oil company?
Yeah.
And that's the only job you had?
Yeah. So I stayed there till I retired.
Mm-hmm. You retired what year?
83. Been retired 10 years for the second day of June.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, coming up about 10 years almost. Anything else you do now to keep yourself busy? Or?
No, the yard's about enough for me, mm-hmm. now.
Not a golfer or anything like that? Fisherman?
No.
Hunter, enough like
well,
that?
I used to fish some, but mm-hmm. not much anymore.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what, it was a pleasure meeting you,
Ralph, nice meeting you.
And I appreciate taking the time to talk to us today.
Glad to do it.
Okay, thanks.